We probably all know about Rosie the Riveter, the symbol of women entering the workforce in World War II. But factories weren't the only places hiring women while men fought overseas. A women's baseball league was started to keep America's pastime alive during the war, too. And a player from Norwood was one of its biggest stars. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today we're going to talk about that player, Dottie Kamenchuk. She was named one of the top female athletes of the 20th century by Sports Illustrated and was a major inspiration for the 1992 film A League of Their Own. Joining me in this recorded interview to talk about Kamenchuk and what made her a star is Michelle Houts, author of the book Cammy on First, Baseball's Dottie Kamenchuk. Thank you so much for being here, Michelle.
Thanks for having me, Lucy.
Well, Michelle, tell us about the league Dottie played in and how and why it was created.
Yeah, as you said, in 1942, 1943, as America was entering World War II, people were worried about Major League Baseball. Fans were worried, but of course, the club owners were worried. And even President Roosevelt joined in on the discussion on what would happen to Major League Baseball when so many of the able-bodied players had enlisted to go fight in the war. And they had mixed feelings. What would it look like if we're playing games at home, you know, while our young soldiers are out fighting? But then the kind of the deciding factor was a letter that Roosevelt penned where he basically said, more Americans are working harder and longer hours than ever. Never did we need that distraction and that a pastime to entertain and kind of get our minds off of the heaviness of just coming out of the Great Depression and being at war. So he kind of greenlighted for Major League Baseball to go on if it could. And he was also in touch with Philip Wrigley, who we know as the owner of the Cubs and the chewing gum empire. It was Philip Wrigley that got the idea to start the All-American Girls Professional, actually softball league in its inception, and then it evolved into baseball.
And was this league for women, or I guess they called it the Girls League, was it initially seen as sort of a joke? I mean, was it serious from the beginning?
I think that the people that organized the league, they never saw it as a joke. But I think that as the spectators heard about it, they heard, you know, oh, these are girls playing in skirts. This is going to be entertaining. But it didn't take long for them to realize that the original 64 women chosen to play on the four inaugural teams were athletes. Mm. And they were narrowed down from a field of, I think, 280 players from 26 states. And five Canadian provinces showed up for the initial tryouts.
Wow. Now, I know that there were some rules, I guess, and even though the people who started this league were serious about it, they had some perceptions about how these women should act. How were the players treated in the early days of this league? They had to go to charm school, didn't they?
They did. Luckily, that did not prevail throughout the entire league. The charm school ended after the first 3 years. But the league organizers wanted them to play like men and look like women. So, you know, the skirts were absolutely a must. They were going to play in skirts. They were going to do the whole charm school thing where they had people come in and teach them how to apply makeup and lipstick and how to, you know, walk straight and all the ladylike things that they were supposed to do. They had chaperones constantly. But that, like I said, only lasted the first 3 years. I think there was a lot of pushback from the ladies.
How did those skirts work for sliding into base?
Oh my goodness. I have seen some really, really bad pictures of really bruised legs and skinned thighs. And they didn't. They did not work for sliding, that's for sure.
Yeah, but it sounds like they slid anyway if they had to, huh?
Yes.
So how did Dottie Kamenchuk end up joining the league?
So Dottie was in just before her senior year at St. Bernard High School there in Cincinnati. She was playing for an industrial team. Her school did not have women's softball. It had some women's sports. I think she played girls' basketball in high school, but she was playing for an industrial team that teenagers could play on. And it was a women's team, and it was the H.H. Meyer meatpacking team. And that's the manager of that team is the one that heard about Philip Wrigley sending scouts out. And he's the one that arranged for a scout to be in Cincinnati. Six girls from Cincinnati, including Dottie Kamenchuk, but also Betsy Yacom, went to Chicago to try out for the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League after they were scouted in Cincinnati on that meatpacking team.
And those two that you just named, they were the ones from Cincinnati who made it, right?
Yes, yes. Betsy was assigned to the South Bend Blue Sox, and Dottie was assigned to the Rockford Peaches.
We're talking in this recorded interview about Dottie Kamenchuk, a star of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League in the 1940s and 50s. So what kind of athleticism did Dottie bring to the sport?
Dottie had only ever played outfield. She was a center fielder for the industrial team in Cincinnati. But when she got to the tryouts at Wrigley Field, she was required to put down two positions, and she didn't know what else to put down. So since she was left-handed, she thought she might make a decent first baseman. So she wrote down first base. She played outfield for a few games in the first season, but then pretty shortly after that, they moved her to first base, and that's where she excelled as a first baseman. She was also an excellent hitter, but she also, so much I learned about her was the reason why she was so beloved was her leadership skills. She was a team player in every sense of the way, but she also was really one to help the rookies. She played 12 years, and so she'd seen a lot by the time her career ended, and she was always one to support the new girls.
You mentioned that, you know, the founders of this league, they were serious about it from the start, but the spectators saw it maybe as entertainment initially, kind of, oh, let's go watch these girls in skirts try to play baseball. At what point did the fans really start taking these teams and these players seriously?
I think pretty much right off the bat. I mean, I think that the athleticism was obvious from the start. You know, they thought they were going to be entertained by girls in dresses, and they pretty soon realized that these girls, they threw hard, they ran fast, they hit smart, they slid, they stole bases, and they did it all in skirts. Kind of made them appear both tough and feminine at the same time.
Yeah, a kind of fearless too, doing all exactly. That in a skirt. At least that's how I would see it. How did Dottie end up with the nickname Cammy?
Dottie was definitely a very popular name in the 1940s. When they first assembled the Rockford Peaches, the players soon discovered they had a lot in common. There were several players with the first name Dorothy. Dorothy Kamenchuk and Dorothy Sawyer quickly decided that only one could be called Dottie. So Dorothy Sawyer became Dottie, and Dorothy Kamenchuk became Cammy, and that nickname stuck. But it's a good thing it did, because by the end of the 1943 season, the one Dorothy was traded, but two more Dorothys arrived on the Rockford Peaches. So then we had a Snooky and another Dottie. And then by 1945, the Rockford Peaches alone had four Dorothys on the team when Dorothy Ferguson joined them, and she became Dorothy. So lots of Dorothy's, yeah. And Dottie.
Wow. Yeah, I think she was smart to stick with Cammy. That sounds like good logic there. So how much did women get paid on these teams?
It's surprising that their wages at the beginning were actually pretty generous. They got between $40 and $85 per week. Their salaries were not across the board, so better players made more money. But that was more than they could get working at home, even though many, many young women were working in factories to help support the war effort. So not only were they paid between $40 and $85 a week, but their living expenses were taken care of. By the end of Dottie's career, she was earning $125 a week, and she was one of the highest paid players in the league.
Mm. Well, and she started really young. You mentioned it was the before her senior year. So she was only 17. She hadn't graduated from high school yet. Tell us about that. Did she end up graduating from high school?
Yes, she did. So you're right. She was only 17. And because she wasn't 18, she had to have her mom sign for her to even be allowed to go to the tryouts in Chicago at Wrigley Field. Joanna was Dottie's mother, and Joanna was twice widowed. Dottie's father passed away when Dottie was only nine years old. And her mother, Joanna, was a Romanian immigrant. Her father was a Hungarian immigrant. Both of them came over within a couple of years of each other and met in Cincinnati. And Joanna did remarry, and Dottie had a stepfather for a couple of years, but he died unexpectedly after a surgery. And so Joanna was twice widowed. She worked at the Procter & Gamble. The census from 1940 has Joanna as soap factory cleaner is what they list her vocation as. So I think it had to be really hard for her to send her 17-year-old daughter off when it was just the two of them, and they were very close. But she signed the paper, and she later said that she signed it thinking that there's no way Dottie would make this big team in this big city. But of course she did. And so from there, she didn't even come home. She went straight to Rockford, and she played part of that season and then came home and finished her senior year at St. Bernard and graduated from high school.
You mentioned that by the end of her career, she was one of the highest paid women in the league. How did she rank as a player? What kind of credit does she get for the skills she showed on the field?
That is a great question. She did win several awards, but the entire team kind of was forgotten once it ended. You know, they just kind of went their different ways. And I can tell you a little bit more about what Dottie did, but they were completely forgotten until Penny Marshall's movie came along. And then they all began to get, recognition that was overdue, that much deserved. And they were inducted as an entire league in 1988 into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
There was a quote at the time she was playing that became kind of famous about her skills at first base, right? A male first baseman had some quote about her that I've heard about.
Yes. So in 1950, New York Yankees star first baseman Wally Pipp, he made a comment about her that, like you said, kind of would be repeated over and over again. He called her the fanciest fielding first baseman I've ever seen, man or woman. And that got her a lot of attention. It got her so much attention that a team in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, a men's minor league team, became interested in recruiting her as their first female player. And they contacted Cammy, and they contacted the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League officials. And in the end, Cammy turned down the offer. I think the offer was turned down by the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League on Cammy's behalf, but she was relieved. She thought that it was a publicity thing. She didn't feel like she would be taken seriously, and she was happy playing in the women's league.
Yeah. Well, and even as good a player as she was, I imagine that physically she was substantially smaller than the men who she'd be playing with if she were out on the field.
Exactly. Most of the men would outweigh her by more than 60 pounds and probably stand a foot taller than her. So she knew that physically her size wouldn't allow her to be competitive.
Yeah. Now, I've heard her compared to Pete Rose, like she was the Pete Rose of her league. But here's my question. Shouldn't it be that he was the Dottie Kamenchuk of his league? I mean, she came first. She played before he did.
Right. I agree with you. Yes, she came first. And that would be a better comparison.
You mentioned Penny Marshall's movie, the movie A League of Their Own. How much of that Gina Davis character in the movie was based on Dottie?
Right. Well, Penny will tell that Penny has gone on the record as saying that no character in the movie was exactly a character from real life. Almost all the characters were composite characters, she said. So she delved into their stories. Penny attended that 1988 Hall of Fame recognition and induction where all these women were inducted. And that's where the spark came from. That's where the idea for the film came from. So she really wanted to tell these women's stories and tell them fairly accurately. So she did delve into their personal lives, into their family histories, into their past athletics histories, and then put them all together to make these characters. Everyone that knew Dottie Kamenchek that I spoke with felt like Gina Davis just nailed Dottie's character. Now, there were some differences. Our Dottie was a first baseman, and Dottie in the movie was the catcher. And our Dottie was an only child, and the big plot point in the movie is the competitive relationship between Dottie Henson, the character, and her sister Kit, who plays for the Racine team. So, you know, there were a lot of things that were different, but in athleticism and leadership, everybody felt that Dottie Henson was Dottie Kamenchek. Mm.
There's even that scene in the movie where Gina Davis kind of does the splits. Is that echoing anything that our Dottie did?
Yeah, there is a really famous picture of our Dottie making an amazing catch, and it's almost like she's doing the splits in midair. And that picture is in a museum near Rockford, Illinois, and it's been, you know, on the internet, and it's been everywhere. And a lot of people think of Gina Davis doing the splits, catching the ball, doing the splits, yeah, as, you know, a very similar athletic feat.
Yeah. You know, Michelle, you mentioned at the top of our discussion how we had never needed the American pastime of baseball quite like we did during World War II, echoing the president's sentiments about that. Mm-hmm. How do you think Dottie relied on the sport? And do you have a sense for what that role meant to her being such a star in that league?
Oh, Dottie was a quiet person, and she was a private person, and very, very little of her own writing exists. And that was, as a biographer, that was one of my burning questions is, you know, I could find out a lot of facts, but I really, you know, I wanted to know more and more about Dottie's feelings about the role that she played, about what was going on in the world at the time. And unfortunately, I didn't ever really get to find a lot of personal writing and things like that. But I did get to talk to so many people who either played as a teammate to her or as an opponent to her. And they felt that she loved the sport, but she loved the people more. And she was just a generous and kind-hearted person, but she was also deeply competitive and took the game very, very seriously.
So how did Dottie end up leaving the game, and what happened with her after she left baseball?
Yeah, she got to do a lot in the 12 years that she played. She saw the game change. Like I said, it did start out as softball, and it eventually, they lengthened the base paths. The size of the ball got smaller. The pitching style changed in the end, it was pretty much they were playing baseball. But she also got to travel. She got to go to Cuba for spring training. She had never been outside the U.S. before, 2 years in 47 and in 48. They played in the South American. They played 9 games in a Latin American female baseball league. She got to go to Guatemala, Nicaragua, Costa Rica. And then she took off 1 year with a back injury and then came back for her last year. And that was the end of her baseball career. She had been in the off season going to University of Cincinnati, but she ended up getting a physical therapy degree from Marquette University in 1958. And she worked in Hamilton County, Ohio, for quite a while before she moved to Southern California. And in Southern California, she had a long and successful career as chief of occupational and physical therapy at LA County Crippled Children's Services. But she didn't talk about baseball. For a lot of people, when the movie came out, many of these women were working. They were mothers. They were grandmothers. And many people in their lives had no idea that they had been part of this league. And so the movie is kind of what brought it all to the surface again for Dottie and everyone else.
Do you think of Dottie as a hero? What do you think her story can teach all of us today?
I do think of her as a really good role model for young girls, especially, and especially young female athletes. There was a whole advertising campaign about throw like a girl, and they'd have people come in and pretend to throw a ball like a girl, and you know, they'd kind of just give it this wimpy little push, and then some young women came in, probably about the age Dottie was when she first became a member of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. And those girls came in and like threw a, you know, pretended to throw just a powerhouse pitch. And I feel like Dottie was doing that and showing young women well before her time that girls can play the boys' sports, and throwing like a girl is not a bad thing. It can be a good thing.
And even in a skirt.
And in a skirt.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking with Michelle Houts, author of the book Cammy on First, Baseball's Dottie Kamenchek. Thank you so much for your time today, Michelle. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thanks, Lucy.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez-Cornu. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.